You are listening to the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast, Episode 1.
Welcome to Episode 87 of the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast. Today is May the 26th. 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Frillo, and this is my graduated brother, James Frillo.
Yeah, that's me. Matthew Dean Frillo, huh?
Yeah.
Getting all official.
I literally say Matthew Dean Frillo every show.
Do you?
Yes.
Clearly I listen. Okay.
That's awesome. That's great.
I'm going to have to listen next time. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the podcast if you say that.
I do. I think I do. I try to. So, yes, as you can tell, if you're probably listening to the fact that there's no delay between our voices or if you're watching the video and there's this cool new split screen thing where I can pass into his side of the split screen.
That's right.
That's actually because we're sitting next to each other for some family graduation business.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So congratulations to all those who, you know,
graduated.
Yeah. Joined the real world, as it were.
But yeah, so here we are. So what that means is that we're doing the podcast live for us. We're doing it a little early because we're going to go literally go camping right after we get done with this. And, yeah.
And also, we've already been hanging out all weekend long, which means that we've done the equivalent of 6 hours of the podcast without an audience, which was probably
not the wisest decision. Yeah, so all the good conversations are done. You're just going to get the rehashed short version. It won't be exciting at all.
Yeah, we'll try to include the fun stuff. Anyways, this week, like every week, well, maybe not exactly like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James does have a short disclosure that he's got to throw out there so we can keep his job.
Yes, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Cool.
All right.
Tomorrow's Memorial Day. So mark your calendars. If you want to follow us throughout the week, man.
I'm so
I don't know, my screen's going on. I want my different windows up and stuff. I'm working on the iPad.
It's right here. It's right there.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
So if you want to follow us throughout the week and get all sorts of cool updates, like photographs of graduation ceremonies or tweets congratulating graduates or posts about where we're eating our graduation celebration meals, stuff of that nature, feel free to go into our tweeters. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow. That's the D for D.
I did see that, and I am at James Furlow with a mystery last name.
Exactly.
Middle name.
I was going to say. I didn't know. If you want to, we've got all sorts of stuff all over the internet for social media. We use our real names, so if you just search for us, you can follow us and be friends with us and whatever. It's all sorts of interesting stuff. I've decided to get into Vine a little bit. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Really?
Yeah. I have friends that do it, and it seems fun.
Here's my latest Vine, which was actually from a really long time ago. So
perfect.
But it's a timeless classic is what it is. Wait, where is it? Where are you?
Wow, that's awesome. That's how often you use it. You don't even know where the app is.
There it is. I found it. It was in photos. Which makes sense. For no reason. Profile. Yep, here it is.
See your dog?
It's Vinny digging into our chair, chasing a fly that he caught.
What?
it's not even playing. That's how awesome this app is. But you can see he's the corner of the chair and the armrest, and his head is literally buried in it.
Basically, what we're getting at is you guys should all probably go and check this.
Yeah, it's just total goofiness right there.
Loading, loading, loading.
Sad.
Yeah, but.
Anyways, yeah, check it out, man. You should follow me.
I do.
Oh, I need that.
I think you follow me too. I just
probably.
I'm on the app. I have like followers and.
You're a lurker.
Dude, I hate people like that, and I'm totally like that on that app. I like to only use apps I use.
Okay.
That's keys.
So big news happened this week.
Yeah.
I got an email on what was it? Friday or Saturday? I honestly don't remember. Those all kind of blur together for me. I got an email from Google letting me know that they are shutting down Google Buzz.
So, I need to clarify something. Google Buzz wasn't shut down.
I know!
What does this even mean?
I know. I was like, wow. Oh, okay. So, from what I understand, they announced in the email is literally said, I'm going to say that word literally all podcasts.
Literally.
in October of 2011, they announced that they'd be shutting it down.
Yes.
And so as of July 17th, they actually will.
It's part of their spring cleaning when they take away Google Reader as well.
Yeah.
Still used regularly.
So.
And have found no replacement for it.
They're going to take all your Buzz posts and copy them onto Google Drive. So essentially you have them.
So the fact that I didn't post a Buzz means that this doesn't affect me really.
Did you get an email from them?
I did.
Oh, okay. So
I might have posted like
pretty
one
much.
Or two things.
And then it lets us know that any comments that were made will also be saved, but under their files, not your files, and who cares. But anyways, Google Buzz, shutting down.
What a dumb app. What a colossal mistake. You see, the thing is that I wouldn't care that much, except it's like, it just is like, it's like a twisting of the knife of Google Reader, because it was...
What do you mean?
Well, it's just like all wrapped up into the same, like, Google Reader was a success, and they don't want it to be, so they're gonna... Because they wanted to be, it's too so, you know, they wanted a more social thing. They wanted Google Reader to become Google Buzz. They wanted Google Plus to become Google Buzz. And then, so it could be like Google Reader. They want all these things to be like a Google Reader, except Google Reader. And why are they getting rid of Google Reader? I'm still not over it.
Who cares about Buzz? Yeah. Google Reader. Come on.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's frustrating to me.
Well, companies have started coming out of the works. Dig was talking a little bit about what they're going to have, which sounds like it's not going to be quite as cool as what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Which you're like, okay, fine. Some other ones like Reader for iOS and Mac. That guy's been making some changes. Obviously, those other guys, what's their name? I've got their app that I choose not to use. Feedly, you know, they've been making a lot of improvements and changes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of movement in the space, and I think that you will see all of them come out with their stuff on like July 20th.
Good.
You have like 10 days to make a decision because they're going to take as much time as they need to do all their development.
Yeah, I've already seen a couple of websites that have popped up saying this is a Google Plus or a Google Reader replacement. Notice how nobody did that with Google Buzz.
yeah.
And hopefully, something good happens.
Otherwise, this podcast will be really short all of a sudden.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Google Buzz, big news.
Yeah, very cool. So, in other Google-related news, so we're doing a Google Hangout right now through Google Plus. Pretty much everything is Google Plus now. Google is Google Plus. So they're adding all sorts of new features and stuff. We talked about this a bit last week. They like integrated all of their different photo buckets together. So now you get like 16 gigs of online cloud storage space for your photos and docs and stuff.
Right.
And it's pretty cool. But one of the things that they have added, a new feature that they added that they didn't really tell anybody about, was the fact that Google Plus can now do searches all your photos for object recognition. So facial recognition has been around for quite a while. It's why when you like, you know, integrated in these types of services, it's like one on Facebook when you go to tag somebody, it automatically pops up a box around people's faces because they find people's faces and they actually can identify you in the picture. And there was a long debate about whether or not they should just automatically tag you in all of your pictures. And they, you know, as much as companies like Facebook get, you know, no credit for just taking all your data like that, they do have, you know, an at least an ounce of restraint. So they don't do that. Well, Google decided that this was a little less freaky to people and could be kind of useful. So you can actually go into Google Plus and like search for objects in your pictures. So if you like type jewelry, it'll search all your pictures and come up with stuff with jewelry as though it were tagged as jewelry. But there's no tags or anything. It just does all the image processing on its own.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
So that's just to make search on Google Plus better is the ultimate thing there. I know they talked about doing those deeper dive tag things, and they gave an example of the Eiffel Tower and being able to, you know, do more Eiffel Tower searches, just stuff like that.
Yeah. I think it's part of a big, you know, I think it's a move of just, yeah, getting more information, and they can do it, so they're going to start trying to. And one of the things that was one of the comments that I read that was brought up, and I think that this was quite the observation, was I think this is also part of a bigger movement of technology. They're now processing your photos for what is in the photo, which is obvious. But what happens when they start coming up with the fact that, like, you've got a Coke bottle or a Disney character in the background or a basketball team hat on?
When they start to know your location of where you're taking them, like, what if a lot of your photos are taken at Giants games? Even if there's no, Giants, logos or anything like that, but, like, we know where this is. This is at the Giant Stadium, and he goes here like once a week.
Right, and or it's I would say in all, it's all the more, you know, church. If you're wearing, the broader point is if they know where you're going and you're always going to the Giant Stadium and you're always they're taking pictures and you always have a Giants hat in it, and then Google Offers isn't gonna say, hey, we've got two tickets to the Oakland A's, you know.
Right. It's not,
and I wonder, you know,
unless the A's are looking for fans.
Yeah, exactly.
It might be like, hey, let's go after them. We already know they like baseball.
Yeah. Do you want to go to a stadium that's only a quarter full instead of one that's packed? Come to the A's game. Oh, I like the A's. just nobody goes. But yeah, it's an interesting new technology that they just kind of thrown out there very, very quietly. Part of it is, I think it's because it's, you know, it's a Google just testing it out, and I'm sure it's one of those really cool features that you're going to fall in love with and you're going to develop into your workflow just to find out that they're going to kill the product in, you know, 2 years. Because we were just testing out a technology and we wanted to integrate it into this other thing, which, you know, is pretty, you know, par for the course for Google, but it's definitely, I don't know, it makes me wonder, like, how long until they start doing the same processing of YouTube? I'm sure they do it to some degree already, because why wouldn't you? But it's like...
Well, they do it with the music, for sure.
Right, yeah, they already look for music, they already look for, you know, they look for all sorts of stuff.
So all that to say is they're willing to do that, which means as they develop the other sensing or whatever search filter criteria, they will use it. They're okay with that.
Another really interesting.
Of course, I like to think of it as optimistic, especially with like Google Plus, where that's what they're doing is they're putting what Google's really good at, which is these huge servers and data processing and and organizing things, even organizing the items inside your picture for you so you can easily find them later.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what they're excellent at. And now they're applying it to your photos and my photos and stuff that people put together. And that's extremely helpful. And they're obviously not Facebook, but they still need to find out what their niche is. They still think that they're Facebook, and they're not.
Yeah.
They need to figure that out and then decide what it is that they actually are.
Right.
And once they do that, they will be much happier and more successful. It just, I don't know. They still don't understand what they are. I don't even know what they are, which is
part of the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. So, cool.
Speaking of companies who don't know who they are.
Yeah, really.
That no one else really knows who they are. There was some other big news. It actually happened on Sunday, and I didn't mention it because we ran out of time on the podcast, but I just want you to know that I thought it first on the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. I just didn't share it.
Yeah.
But whatever. Yahoo made a little purchase.
Yeah.
This last week. They spent $1.1 gazillion. Oh, no, it was just $1 billion on Tumblr.
Yeah. So I feel like everybody this week has had a crash course in what is Tumblr? Because, you know, the first news reports are like, you know, I am vaguely aware of Tumblr in that I know what it is and I know how it works. Because I pay attention to this kind of stuff. But I've never actually, like, actively used it, participated in it. Every once in a while, I get, like, I'll stumble onto a Tumblr site. And I always had this, like, vague notion of it's for 13-year-olds. Because what's weird about it is it's, like, what it is it's, like, all of our teenage cousins or some of our teenage cousins get into it. So I had this, like, this, you know, this old guy notion of this is for the young whippersnappers. I'm not going to get involved in that. And then it, like, hits the news. And I was also, like, vaguely aware that there was some porn on it. And that became a gigantic thing. About, you know, are they going to keep the porn or not? And like, really? How much are we going to talk about this? Because there's so few places to find porn on the internet. And
I think it's funny, like, you know, that was the whole thing with Google, with YouTube.
Yeah.
Google's purchase. They had all this pirated content. Like, are they going to keep it? What are they going to do? How's that going to work?
Yeah.
And Yahoo's going to get to deal with a similar type of question.
Yeah.
I honestly think they would be smart to be like, let's just do whatever Google did with YouTube and it will be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you'll see is they're just going to, for a while, you know, they claim we're not going to do anything. We're not going to change it at all. But you're like, then why did you buy it?
Well, they didn't say that. They said they promised not to screw it up.
Oh yeah. That's right. That's right.
That was the line.
I think what they're going to do is they're going to keep it, and for at least a little while, they're not going to touch it. They're just going to keep it, or they'll maintain the code. They'll move everything over to their servers, which will increase the performance, which is what Google did with Yahoo, or not Yahoo, with YouTube, was they bought them, and the first thing they did was they moved everything over to their servers, and the service improved 20-fold.
But it's not bad.
Right.
It doesn't have the same problems that YouTube had.
Well, that's because YouTube was, you know, this new video, you know.
Well, and more importantly, because everything, I'm going to guess that everything is hosted on Amazon's web servers.
Right. Yeah.
So it just works. It's just up all the time. They scale, no problem.
But I got to believe that when you actually put the, you know, because Yahoo's not too shabby when it comes to being an engineering service.
Right.
What they're going to do is they're going to throw their engineers at it and say, fix all the leaks. You know, just tighten this thing, this package up so that it's nice. You won't see a dramatic improvement, but you'll see small stability and usability things start to change immediately. And I hear the app is actually like a nightmare when it was programmed because it's
really
because it's like it's gigantic and bloated, and it's UI, especially for a lot of the older folk, and by older folk I mean, you know, people not in their teenage years anymore, are complaining about usability. And I think what you'll see immediately is those sorts of things get the professional engineering touch, you know, of a huge team that works with UI on that sort of thing. And then you'll see slowly, you'll see more and more ads get incorporated as they try to.
Which they did. That was one of the things that they called out, was that Yahoo does have a big advertising platform, and they've got a bunch of users, and Tumblr has been trying to think about and move towards that monetization route, and Yahoo's going to be able to help them out with that.
Right.
And that'll be super helpful.
Which, yeah, I mean, and you know, it was bound to happen, and you know, and I'm, as long as they don't just like turn on ads next week, I think people will, you know, slowly increase the number of ads. Do it as a couple. Do it within a test area. Don't do too much. You know, your classic is.
Well, thankfully, Marissa Meyer was
a Googler.
Yeah, and she gets what it means to have, what's the word I'm thinking of? Appropriate or the right type of ad, you know, in the right context. I don't remember the phrase, but
yeah,
you know, at the very least tasteful.
yeah. And yeah. And they'll probably go the Google route of trying to, you know what you're talking about and make sure, yeah, everything will, hopefully they do that right. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like a crazy idea. I think the weirdest part about it that everyone's kind of feeling is like, you know, how do you make sure it doesn't become MySpace or GeoCities or something like that? These things just kind of, they crest, they get popular. You know, there's a different level.
So that's the question, right? Because Yahoo has bought things in the past and done very little with them. GeoCities was once owned by Yahoo.
Yeah.
But the big example would be Flickr.
Right.
Where they bought it and just, they didn't kill the service, but they definitely didn't help the service either.
Right.
And so when it eventually did die, or, you know, not necessarily die, but as it faded into the past,
yeah,
it was just kind of like, well, you know, that's because they sold out to Yahoo.
Did you hear what Melissa Meyer did with Flickr just like last week?
I did. So as part of their
announcement,
well, and nice. So my point was going to be that, you know, historically they showed a total lack of interest in helping out Flickr,
right?
Which would be very concerning to, you know, say like Tumblr.
I'd say.
But at the exact same time that they announced the Tumblr announcement, they also announced a total new revamp of Flickr.
Right.
So at least, you know, showing, hey, we're willing to invest in these properties that we have to bring them to the level that they should be at.
Yeah.
And so do you have a Flickr account?
I don't, but what you're probably about to talk about is kind of tempting to at least get it open up and start with it.
Yeah, so originally, if you look at this picture on this other screen,
yes,
over here, it shows that the pictures were fairly small, because basically you add photos and you follow people and then you have a photo stream. It's Instagram 1.0.
Right.
But you can do any photo size you want, which is nice. And so, but they were smaller photos and stuff. And so they redid the format for it, where when you look at it now, it's, you know, wall to wall photos, nice big types of stuff. And so it just looks really, really nice and clean,
right,
and visual, which you're like, okay, it's Flickr, it's photos, it should be. They did the same thing for their app, which is super sweet. And then the other thing that they did, which I probably won't be able to find fast enough. Oh, yeah, here it is. This is the crazy part. You ready for this? Because this is what's going to get you.
Yes.
They are giving every single user 1 terabyte of free space.
That's what I was going to – that's what caught my attention.
You know, it's funny. When Gmail started up and they were like, everyone gets 10 gigs. Or what was it, 1 gig? What was the – I mean, it was like a –
yeah.
For their Gmail, which at the time everyone was like, you get 200 megabytes. And they came out and were just like, we're giving you a gigabyte.
Right.
It was a ridiculous number. And then very quickly everyone else goes, oh, okay, yeah, we'll lift it up.
Yeah.
You know, and even Google, they're like, oh, everyone gets 10 gigabyte or 15 gigabytes of storage space on Drive and, you know, whatever. And they're the leader. And now you've got Flickr coming in going, oh, we'll give you a terabyte.
Yeah, Yahoo just...
boom.
Which actually makes sense, because what you'll find, I think, is you'll find that, you know, a lot of your users will never use more than 10 or 20 gigs, but they can use up to a terabyte. You might have a few people that use a terabyte, but it's not like you don't actually have to have – it's kind of like a bank where a bank doesn't have – you know, if they have the deposits for, you know, $1 billion in the bank – from a million people, so they have, right. You know, they have $1,000 from every person, give or take. They don't have $1 billion in the bank. They have a million, and just assume that not everybody will go in for the $1,000 at the same time.
Right, right. Well, and they're doing exactly what Google did with Gmail, where they came out with, I honestly don't remember the amount, but it was like, wow. Yeah. It was a lot for the time. And their whole thing was like, just save every single email. We're not even going to add a delete button. Just archive it off. You don't have to manage it. You don't have to think about space. You don't have to delete. Read it, archive, search for it later. You're done.
Yeah.
That was their whole value prop. And they're like, and we've given you enough space so that you literally never have to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what they're saying is you can do, 500,000 original full resolution, pixel perfect, brilliant photos. Now, if you remember, a week ago with Google I.O. when they were making their photo announcements and we were talking about that?
Yeah.
Their whole thing was like, because we're giving you 15 gigs of space, we will allow you to keep, you know, it was a certain, a small percentage of your photos. You can decide which ones you want to do full resolution.
Right.
Everything else will be in the smaller size so that it's easy to share and back and forth. And so, I mean, as a user, I'm like, oh, well, so I got to decide which photos I really like and which ones I want fully uploaded. How do I manage what that is?
Right.
And, you know, so it calls a bunch of questions. And they did it for space reasons. And now Yahoo's coming in and like, boom, take that.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that you're very quickly going to see all other companies. I mean, Facebook's never had a limit, which, you know, is cool. But they've also never done the full res stuff.
Yeah.
They do high res, I guess.
They're getting better about it, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that, yeah, I mean, I hate the idea of having to decide right now whether I want this photo to be low res or high res, especially because as the screens get better, you're always like, oh, well, this picture was clearly taken 5 years ago because it looks awful, whereas at the time it didn't look that bad, and, you know, And how do you know what pictures are going to be important, you know, in 10 years, which ones you want to have high res and whatnot? And it just seems, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things for me, like, I've been really working on taking more pictures, and I've completely filled up my iCloud storage, and it's, like, not even letting me back up my phone anymore, and I'm like, why did I get a 64 gig phone? I didn't think this through. there's a miscommunication there. And so now I'm like actually thinking about the fact that I do want to back up all these full high resolution pictures somewhere. And I'd been kind of using a very broken approach to doing that. And now,
which is what? Just curious.
I'm just, you know, a combination of Dropbox, iCloud, Facebook, whatever. It's just all, but mostly just stored on my phone, you know, just, I got one copy of it and that's it. And if I lost my phone, those pictures would be gone forever, which would be, you know, whatever. And I feel like I'm terrible at taking pictures. I just don't care that much. I like having pictures in like years later. I'm always like, oh man, I wish I had pictures of that, 'cause that would have been cool. Kind of. And, but so I guess why I say that is just because, for me, I imagine that if that's how I feel about photos and I don't care that much, how do people who actually like care a lot about photos feel about all this? They're going to really, you know, there's going to be a big movement to find a place that will let you to store, you know, your giant megapixel, you know, super high resolution. I can zoom in, you know,
yeah,
you know, 1,000 feet with this picture and still have it be look nice, you know, especially as cameras keep getting better, you know, every phone's got an 8 megapixel camera, and in 2 years, 2-3 years, every phone's probably going to have a 12 or 13 megapixel camera, and it's just going to keep getting more and more ridiculously high resolution, and, right, you know, I don't know. It makes you one, I mean, this is obviously where it's going, and it's cool. I think this is where you really see Melissa Myers is going to really,
Marissa.
What I call her, Melissa, Marissa Myers. I think this is hopefully where you'll see her really take off. You know, it's interesting. The most interesting thing about Yahoo's new strategy is the fact that they obviously hate the letter E. What is Flickr, Tumblr?
Oh.
Like, they just, they don't like it. That was, the house is burning down.
Yeah, no, I don't know. So they're I think they're treating Yahoo or Flickr pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they're going to treat Tumblr pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Marissa does seem to be on the right track with, you know, with her thoughts and what she's doing. And it's fun to see them back in the game because they were just an also-ran. It'll be cool to see what they do with fantasy sports when that happens.
Yeah.
Because that's been another one where you go, wow, this is from 1990. And it's just,
and yet fantasy sports are bigger than ever. So there's really a,
and then people pay,
yeah,
to do that. And that's a, that is a revenue generator.
Right.
So that is worth their time and energy to invest in.
Right.
And I've got to believe that they're thinking about it. They're going to, and it's going to be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of impressive. And good thing, whatever, what happened to the guy before her? Turned out he like didn't have an actual degree. Was that the case?
Yeah.
They got lucky, man. They got so lucky with him that they were, and that they had a real easy excuse to fire him.
Yeah.
But interesting. So, man, so this is a crazy week for guns, and technology. We're gonna do a hard pivot in the show. So obviously, like, the whole 3D printed guns have been kind of a big thing. Every time we talk on the show, we tend to be big advocates of, I guess I'll talk for myself. I tend to be a big advocate of the fact that, you know, it's going to be damaging. It's going to be easy to imagine all the terrible things you can do with a 3D printer.
okay.
And especially as they get better and better, like, you know, you can, and you know, the whole, you wouldn't download a car. And I've already seen it was a pick, you know, it's that freeze frame from the anti-piracy things of, you wouldn't download a car. And then it's a picture of a dude holding a 3D printed car toy saying, yes, I would.
I only don't because I couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Just wait. And so there's all sorts of reasons why 3D printers will be, you know, are gonna, they obviously have an uphill battle, and there are people like the Cody Wilson dude who's you know, he likes the controversy. He wants people to notice him and what he's doing, and so he's gonna go to the most controversial option, which is the 3D printed gun that anybody can print this gun and then go and sneak it into an airplane and take it over and kill everybody. That's like, that's the scenario that they're trying to generate in order to catch people's attention and freak them out. Which is weird considering the fact that there are like incredibly hard plastics that you can take to your average machine shop. They could easily machine it, cut it out for you on a CNC machine in a couple of hours, put the whole thing together, and guess what? You've got a gun that you can walk into an airport with. I mean, it's so trivial in the fact that all it does is it takes one person out of the equation. But whatever, it's getting a lot of attention, and people love to garner that sort of notoriety. This is a random thought, but the Australians decided to do a demonstration of one and see how dangerous these guns really are. So they downloaded the file of it and they printed one out. And I guess they were using the wrong printer because when they fired it off, it blew up the gun.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's another part of it is like most, you know.
That was like in Iron Man 2 where they're showing off, we've had other places testing their different Iron Man type suits. He goes, oh, really? Let's look at some of those on film.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crashing and blown up. It goes, oh, yeah, that's working really well.
Exactly.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, so, you know, it's you know, technology and weaponry is an interesting area of study, but there was one that kind of weirds me out, and I it causes an ounce of pause, and maybe for reasons that people won't necessarily understand, but it's okay. Really cool technology at the same time. So there's this dude. He's a wild game hunter, and he likes to hunt gazelle. And he's a pretty smart guy, and I can't remember his name. And John McHale.
John McHale. McLean or McHale?
McHale.
Okay.
And he's a pretty good shot over a pretty good distance. But and when you're, you know, if you don't know anything about firing long range rifles and stuff, you know, you got to take into all sorts of accounts, things into account, like wind speed, you know, temperature, humidity. Those all affect how
wind
far
speed.
Wind speed. Yeah, how far the bullet goes.
Wind speed.
Yes. How far the bullet goes and where it goes, and then
gravity.
Yes, gravity.
Curvature of the earth.
Those are included
wind
too.
Wind speed.
Yes. And as you, and not to mention, those are like the things that you take into account if the target's standing still. If it's moving, you have to do all of that while leading the target. And so he had kind of grown frustrated trying to hunt gazelle because they're super fast and, couldn't hit them. And so he decided that, you know, there's some pretty powerful computers out there. Maybe, if we were to build a computer into one of the guns, it could help us do the calculations for us.
Ah.
So he designed this. It's basically a camera, and it can do what you do is you go out there and you can do image recognition. So you like point it at the gazelle that you want to shoot.
Okay.
And then you tell it that's the gazelle. It'll do image recognition on it. So if the gazelle starts to move, they go, okay, that's the gazelle moving, and it'll be able to keep track of it.
Okay.
It's got a bunch of sensors on it for wind speed, temperature, humidity, so it can take all those things into account.
Wow.
And it's a rather intelligent computer, so or a very fast computer. So as it does all those things, it will calculate for you where you need to aim in order to hit that moving target. So it'll create a crosshair.
What does it do, like a red, green, and
I don't actually know. They didn't show anything.
So you're going to hit it. Got missile lock, yeah. Firing.
Pretty much. And that's how they describe it. And basically what you do is, like, as it's moving, you just move the gun and you cross the hairs, but this is the great part about it. You don't pull the trigger once they align. What happens is when you're ready to fire, you pull the trigger and then cross the hairs through each other, and when they align, the gun fires.
It only fires when you got it perfect.
Yep. And so, and wow. They're talking about how they're hitting targets up to like thousands of meters off, like 1,100 is one of their long ones. They're really, really long shots.
That's that far? I just don't
yeah, know. 1,000 meters is ridiculous. Did you ever see the movie Shooter with Marky Mark?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So he shoots like 1,500 meters, and it was, you know, he's considered like the best in the world, and that's why it's like such a big deal when he kills them, and they go through this thing. So to have like novices be able to hit 1,100 meters,
yeah.
It's kind of a big deal, especially because, you know, if you put this on a more powerful weapon, you know, you can get further shots, and as, you know, the progression of technology and all these different things get incorporated, it's going to get better and better.
So that hasn't existed, at least at a military level yet.
Yeah, that's the greatest part about it. They're, like, talking to military guys about this.
Yeah.
And the military's like, that's pretty clever. We'd like to look into that. Oh, jeez. And, you know, in a military, you can easily think about it. Like, you got your heads-up display, your, like, helmet that, like, goes on your face. You got your camera that goes onto your like, handgun. And all you have to do is pull the trigger and then, like, fling it past the, you know, like, just fling your gun, like, in the direction of the enemy, like, behind a wall or whatever. And all you got to do is get, like, as soon as it, like, lines up, it'll fire. Just don't worry about it. Just pull the trigger, and then, you know, and you sit there and go, man, that's crazy. That's, you know, that I was about to say, that'll save lives, but technically it will save somebody's life.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then they're talking about, and this is actually similar technology to, so what's interesting to me is that they'd never put it on a gun before, because this is really similar in concept to how
it's one of those, like, once they do it, you do go, like, why did this take so long?
Yeah. And
other than it's like, oh, it's a performance enhancement technology, And, you know, for the pure sport of it.
But from
a military perspective,
right.
Who cares?
I'm going
to
say.
I want to live.
Yeah. The military, I don't understand why the military hasn't done it. I would never want to go hunting with
llamas.
Gazelles. Llamas don't move that fast.
That's right.
They'll let you just walk up there and, you know, with an axe if you need. And be so brutal. Oh, my goodness. Oh, jeez.
It's not a chicken, man.
I was just thinking, you know, it's got like a really long neck. Oh, jeez. Anyways, so the one.
This is why we need Gazelle to be a sponsor of our podcast. Exactly. This would be perfect.
Exactly. And so what's interesting about this is that it's actually very similar technology to what the Abrams M1 tanks have, because, you know, the barrel on an Abrams tank is so long that it, like, flexes at, you know, like, bows up and down as it drives. And that, for decades and decades, that was the biggest problem with tanks, is that in order to hit anything, you just stop, let the gun stop vibrating, and then pull the trigger. And so in order to hit a target, you had to become a stationary target. And the Abrams tanks can go like 70 miles per hour. It's like one of their biggest, you know, advantages is that they're incredibly hard to aim anything at, because they just move so fast. And so what they did was they developed this, they put a laser at the base of the turret, and it shoots out straight at the target that they want to hit. And so when the cannon like flexes around, as the barrel flexes around, sometimes it'll pass through perfect alignment with that laser, and when it hits that perfect alignment, you just pull the trigger and it won't fire until it hits that perfect alignment. Which is what made the Abrams tank so terrifying when they first showed out there. Like, you'd be in, you know, Desert Storm, the Iraqis, they'd like park their tank, aim at these tanks moving 70 miles per hour, like three times as fast as their tanks can ever go. And these Abrams tanks would just, like, at mid-drive, would turn at the Iraqi tanks and fire and hit the tanks. And they're just like, we surrender, we give up. Like, how are you supposed to fight that? What the heck? And so it's one of those things where it's not even a particularly novel idea. I think it's just the fact that they're putting it in a package. Somebody did all the engineering to do it.
That's awesome.
There is one little hitch that will prevent it from being used to kill presidents and such things like that by evil people in the world. The fact that it costs $22,000. So it's a bit of an expensive toy.
Wow.
But the thing is that, you know, just the march of technology, you know, give it 10 years and – yeah. That would be commercial grade technology like that. So, I don't know. Terrifying, interesting. It's the future, man.
Huh.
Pretty cool, too, I guess. So, speaking of soldiers and, well, I mean, auto aiming. Really.
There was another announcement this week.
Yeah.
It is related to a company in Seattle.
Seattle. The one not cool one.
Actually, I had this somewhere. Where was it? Oh, yeah, here it is. We'll do this company in Seattle first.
Okay.
Because I just thought it was cool and it's fast. Because I just think it's cool. So there was news of a company in Seattle.
Yeah.
area.
Valve, Microsoft, or Amazon. Those are really your choices when it comes to important Seattle companies.
Costco?
No, tech company. Were we going to talk about Costco? Yeah, I worked in the original headquarters building for Costco.
That's special.
I know. It's very cool.
So Amazon had some concept drawings this week.
Yeah.
Of their new offices that they would like to build in Seattle.
Nice. It's going to be a giant skyscraper.
Well, it will involve a giant skyscraper, yes.
Oh, really? Oh, holy cow.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's that. But they will also involve a biodome.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to call it Rufus 2.0.
That makes sense. What? Why are they calling it that?
I don't know. It's going to be 65,000 square feet.
That's a lot of square feet.
With, ooh, I was off on my floors the other day. With five floors.
All right.
Like I said, it was like 16
floors. Yeah, you said it's huge.
Five is different than 16.
No.
But it's still, it's five floors up, and it's literally going to have like meeting rooms and places for people to hang out and a ton of vegetation and trees. And so, yeah, they're making a biodome, but it's just kind of cool that, and they're literally these big spheres in the middle of the park. And it's pretty cool, like, some of these tech companies are getting pretty darn crazy.
Yeah.
Right? You got one down in Cupertino who's like, we're going to build a spaceship.
Yeah.
You've got these guys now who are like, we're going to build a biodome. And then I don't even know where Facebook's located.
Here.
Yeah, I know, but more specific.
Mountain View.
Mountain View. They're building, what are they doing? Their roof is like, it's essentially, it's one long building, a quarter mile long.
Yeah.
And the roof is going to have vegetation and stuff growing on top of it. Green roof, whatever. But I think it's cool that they are making, you know, they're not just doing the beige, blocky buildings like some companies I work for. And they are...
yeah, that's awesome.
You know, they're...
Make Whitman. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they're making some cool buildings.
You know, that's actually one of the fun parts about living in this area is they do build cool buildings and just kind of crazy, like, we've got more money than we know what to do with, so we're going to make something fun type structures. I'll have to go check that out. Well, I'll have to let them finish building it, and then...
Yeah, this is just a concept right now.
Oh, jeez, just a concept.
Well, you know, this is what they are proposing to build.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Sounds like the sort of thing that Seattle would like.
Yeah, they'd be into it. Get out of the rain a little bit.
Yeah, get out of the rain. Stop. It'll be like, oh, man, I would spend so much time in there. I wonder if it'll be open to the public at all.
It sounds like it's their regular offices, so...
Probably not.
That would be my guess.
Oh.
And so we'll have to figure out how to get a tour of some sort. In there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the first Seattle-related news. The second Seattle-related news actually happened in... I don't know where they actually did the unveiling. It doesn't matter. Was done by Microsoft. Yeah, they unveiled a new computer.
Yes, they did. New piece of hardware. They've been in the hardware business for like 20, 15 years, as they like to point out, because...
No way.
Well, they started with mouses. Mice.
Oh.
Mouses.
Okay.
Mice.
Mises.
Mises. Well, the thing that always gets me with the plural of like, obviously, the plural of mouse is mice, but that's not a, you know, like a furry living creature. Are they mouses, or are they still mice? I feel like they should be mouses to differentiate.
I don't know.
This is hypothetical grammar talk, James. You can take a stance. Okay, so... Yeah.
They unveiled the new Xbox One.
Oh, baby. So they unveiled the original Xbox?
Not exactly.
Okay.
They are just as good as counting as Apple is.
Yeah. What the... Okay.
I don't know.
It's so frustrating.
Well, the idea is it represents one console for your living room. One place to go to, one system... That has everything.
And the Cartesian coordinates for 360 degrees is 1. So you got that going for you.
This
is such a stupid name. Okay, we just gotta let's split. Okay.
Unfortunately, they ruined it with the Xbox for the very first one, so they couldn't just go back to Xbox. So, like, we gotta add something else to it. So, anyways, whatever. They unveil the new Xbox, and you did this is a short one. That's cool. So,
which one are you looking for?
I don't know. Well, so they did their unveiling. This is kind of funny. Is they did their unveiling. They showed everybody what it was and some of the things that it could do. And I watched the keynote stuff. It was about an hour.
Yeah.
Which I think one commenter was like, They expected it to be 2 hours and then found out that it was 45 minutes longer than it should have been. Like, awesome. But they showed everybody, and then all these reporters were typing as fast as they could to get the information up. And it turns out that Wired had an exclusive sneak peek ahead of time. And so then they published their thing at the same time. And so the Wired article about it is awesome and is in-depth and has video and behind-the-scenes interviews and all this stuff, which almost tells you more about what you learned at the presentation. And you're just like, oh, that was cool. It's kind of, if I were one of the reporters, I'd be like, why did you bring me here? What the heck, man?
Yeah, that's pretty unfair. I'll bet the reporters won't be very pleased. There was a bunch of interesting, like, you know, Adam Sessler, the dude who did the video game show for Tech TV and G4 and all of those. His comment was, he tweeted out, all that cheering wasn't from the press. The one thing that he tweeted out, which, I mean, like, in Microsoft's defense, if my company launches a new product, as soon as they say, and here's our new product, I'm going to cheer like mad because I'm like, this is my product. This is my company. Like, why wouldn't I? But it is kind of interesting that none of the press was cheering. that's not a good sign.
So having said that, though, some of the stuff related to it, let's see. Ooh. I think this one had a pretty good...
this one gives you kind of
the overview. So it's running some version of Windows 8. It's got cores and RAM and graphics. It's got a Blu-ray drive.
The internet. So they went to Blu-ray.
Which I'm sure they were just kicking themselves that they lost the HD battle.
Yeah.
And were just waiting to finally be able to play Blu-rays. And, you know, so now they can, which is cool. And the big thing, so, you know, video games, amazing graphics, you know, all that. I would say if I had to distill it down to two, you know, things that they really were talking about and, you know, are a big deal.
Yeah.
Number one was, let's say, live television. And we'll talk about that. And then number two was better spoken and gesture control.
Right.
And so they showed off a lot of that. The live TV part, it looked cool. From what I understand, the way that it works is it works exactly like Google TV does, where you have your cable box. And then you have your Xbox, and your cable box plugs into your Xbox, which then plugs into your television.
Right.
And I was reading this article on The Verge, and I'll be honest, this went a little bit over my head because I don't have cable, and so I didn't fully know what he was referring to. But he said that the Xbox integration is the same as what they've known for like 20 years, and he says instead of what it does is you plug in your cable's HDMI into the Xbox, which overlays the signal with its own interface. And if you're lucky enough to own a newer cable box, you'll get to change channels directly through the HDMI connection. But most people will find themselves using the Xbox One's included IR blaster to control their cable or satellite boxes. So essentially what happens is if your cable box is like, I don't know how old our parents is, but... You know how, like, you use a remote control to control it?
Yeah.
Essentially, the Xbox will come with a little remote control peripheral that will sit in front of your cable box and send it the signal.
Oh, that's awful.
That's how Google TV works.
Really?
Now, for more modern cable boxes, you just plug in the HDMI, and it's smart enough to send the signal through there, and it works better.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that. That is atrocious. Oh, my goodness. That's awful.
So, and that's not Xbox's fault, other than, you know, because they wanted to work with existing ones, and that's what you're going to do. We'll make it a remote control. So when you say Xbox, go to ESPN, it then will, you know, it knows whatever channel that is because it has the information somehow. Because it's getting it from the – because the cable box can go to – it's like a one-way communication, right. Essentially. And so it can get the information, and then it says, oh, we know that that's channel 38. 38, boom, it's there. But what's – so that's so they have essentially created a nice a different layer. It looked nice. I don't use cable, so I'm not a great like person to be like, oh yeah, that's so much better interface than it used to be. But it looked like they did a better job of search, of adding favorites, of even presenting the information, maybe. I don't know. But so that looked like that. But there was this one like the cable industry is going, you know, nuts. And so for me, it's like, and this is just going to kill Microsoft, because what they need to do, and this, fellow listeners, is a conversation we had last night. So so Matthew's ready and raring with his rebuttal. But I really feel like the winner in all of this is going to be a company, and it could be Apple, it could be Amazon, it could be Google, it could be Microsoft, I don't care. Is going to be the one that says, you know what, we're going to partner with Comcast or AT&T or CenturyLink or whoever to replace the cable box. And I think once you do that, wow. I think you've got something pretty magical. And it's a company – I like Apple because of their stubbornness. Because
I like Apple.
Well, what they did was the iPhone, right? They said, we're going to build the device and the hardware and the software, and then we're going to leave it to AT&T, Verizon, and everyone else to figure out how, you know, to give us their signal, essentially, and then we'll process it and take care of the rest. You cannot worry about it.
Yeah.
And you need a company kind of like that who says, just give us a signal coming in from the wall, tell us how to interpret the little bits, and we'll manage the rest.
It's funny, yeah.
And then you will have a powerful device, and then it will be up to the other cable providers, and I don't know how the technology works. Maybe it'll be like the iPhone used to be, where, this is a Comcast-specific Apple TV. This is a, you know, AT&T-specific Xbox One. Right. And if you switch, unfortunately, you got to switch hardware. Bummer.
And I think what
you know, you already have to.
And the idea, you know, the idea I think here is that it's like you what you're talking about is building the cable box into integrating the cable box into pieces of technology. And you know, one of the things there, and I think the cable industry is just they're so crazy. Because this is what's going
to
happen.
It's like the phone industry used to be. We've got our own phones, we've got our own platforms, and our own systems.
And I got to believe that what's going to happen is if a company like Apple or Microsoft or whoever, they're gonna try to crack the nut on this one. And the cable company is going to say that, you know, that's fine. We like this idea. You do the hardware. Customers will buy the hardware. We don't have to buy it. That saves us money. And we can, you know, we'll charge the same, but now we don't have to buy the hardware. That's fantastic. And, or they'll subsidize it partly if you get it with through them.
Yeah.
And but what they're going to say, and I can guarantee this is what's going to happen. They're going to say, you know, we got all this data from the cable box about what people are watching and how long they're watching. So we need to continue to get all that data. And Apple or Microsoft, whoever, they say, that's fine. That's a fair deal. We'll get nice integration. And then the cable company goes, while they're watching other stuff like YouTube or, you know, surfing the internet, you know, how about we get that data too? And
and
I think it's just one of those things where I feel like I can just see it coming. Where you're going to get these companies that it's a big prisoner's dilemma or, you know, game theory if you guys are into Nash. But the idea that you know, if nobody breaks ranks, if everybody keeps the high prices locked in content and nobody, you know, and the cable companies and the networks all play together and protect their little herd, they can make more money longer.
Yeah.
Whereas the first time you have somebody who's able to break through, either breaks out of the herd or breaks into the herd, all of a sudden the floodgates are just going to be opened. And I feel like what they're going to try to do is position themselves in such a way that in order to prevent
I know what you're saying, and it's almost like, so I'm going to go back with the iPhone example. Apple was able to convince AT&T to play along because AT&T was number two and wanted to be number one, and they were like, and here's a way for you to do it. But B, every single person who signs up is going to have a data plan.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, AT&T had to have been sitting there going, this is going to be awesome. Now, they didn't know that. They could not envision how much people were going to use that data. And so, you know, they had a hard lesson to learn there. But I think they're ultimately probably making more.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the data. And they've had the transition from voice and text to just straight up data. And they're working that. And it's almost like you've got to come up with that equivalent for the cable industry where, hey, look, if you plug into our system, everyone's actually going to pay you more and really, really like it.
Yeah.
And I just don't – and maybe there's a percentage piece there where it's like, oh, it doesn't work with basic cable. You have to get the premium package or, I don't know, you know something like that where it's got the – well, you think about like that NFL package that they were talking about where you got the game and then you got stats on the side and all this information. What if the cable company – price that out different where it was like you have your basic cable and all your cable packages and then you have your we'll just call it data on top of it and they can feed you data and it can come back. That's weird because it just goes over the internet, but some sort of crazy thing like that, and the Xbox or Google TV or whoever goes, oh yeah, in order for you to use this, you have to have that data equivalent, and it's like an extra $10, $15 a month. And I would imagine you get a cable company out there that goes, oh, that'd be kind of cool. So you're saying that I'm going to get more subscribers, and they're going to be willing to pay more because they're going to get features. And you and I as customers are going to go, wow, this just made TV so much more immersive, so much more better. I get why I would want to be paying for that extra service because it allows me to do so much more. Yeah, okay, I'm in. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to grab no matter what, you know. So, there's something there to it. And I think Xbox is trying too hard to work for everybody. And so they're making some compromises in order for that to happen. And so you look at it, and Xbox does kind of where you look at it, and you really, 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 really like what they're doing. And you go, this can just be not necessarily so much better, but a little bit better on where it shows me a glimpse of where this could be and what this should be.
Yeah.
And that makes me upset.
Right.
Not because of what they're doing, because what they're doing is awesome. They're pushing the envelope. It genuinely looks like a cool product. I'm like, I would, if I watched television, I'd be all over this.
Yeah, so this is the weirdest part this podcast is that both you and I like occasionally play video games. We're not huge gamers, but we play enough to understand the industry. We like the talk of the hardware because we pay a lot of attention to the hardware. We like the competition. All of our tech discussions started, really and truly, in my opinion, started with the launch of the PS2 and the GameCube, right? I mean, that was like, those are like our earliest discussions of watching the companies compete against each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is like deep, this is deep in our mythos of this podcast is the competition between the video game companies and how they all kind of strategize against each other. But you've got, but with TV, like neither one of us watch TV. Like it was just, we don't care. And like, I can't sit down and watch a TV show without becoming super annoyed after about 10 minutes because the commercials start. And I just like,
I hate commercials.
Commercials are the worst. And I sit there and I go like, to me, there's just this big thing of, this is like they're trying so hard to, you know, replace the cable box, and it's begging to be killed, just to murder me, get rid of me. I don't know. It's hard for me to put myself into a brain space where I can really kind of predict what's going to work and who's going to love it. And I think what will happen is this is going to be one of your – you know, I it's interesting reading a lot of your hardcore gamer blogs are whining like none other because it's like Xbox spent so much time talking about TV and being the multimedia center of your universe and not talking about video games.
Devoted like the entire last 5 minutes to a huge trailer about what looked to be a pretty cool video game.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, obviously, but what people want, or what people were saying they wanted was they wanted a video game system, and this is a media center that plays video games, which, you know, is like, which was the brilliance of the iPhone, right? It was, one part it was an internet browser, one part it was a phone device, and the other part was something else. I can't remember what they, you know,
music.
Yeah, it was an iPod, and each of these different features became apps on your pocket computer. And you know, Microsoft is they're obviously not as clever about how to market brands because they called the thing the Xbox One. And
it makes sense. I get
you
it.
You know what? Okay,
unified.
This is the problem. One. This is the problem.
I mean, you're still gonna have a cable box, but it's one.
I understand the thought there, but this is the problem.
You're not gonna have a DVD player.
When the thing first launched, like day one. This has changed since then, but
day one, Xbox One.
When you typed in Google or Xbox One into Google, it came up with a bunch of pictures of the new system because Google's great. When you typed Xbox One into Bing, it came up with a bunch of pictures of the original Xbox. There's just a certain – because it thought when you said one, it was like the first Xbox, right? Okay, so here all the – this is all the data about the first Xbox. And you just sit there and you go like, and Google is incredibly smart and sophisticated. So it can figure out the difference between saying StarCraft 1 versus, you know, the first Star, you know, it can tell the difference. But Bing does what most people do, which is, oh, you want Xbox One? I'm like, okay, then I'll go on, see if I can't buy it for cheap, a used one on eBay. And like, you type in Xbox One and all the, it's just a marketing thing. And the thing is, it's like, you're right. It's not a bad name. It's just a bad branding issue that they're going to have to work through. What are we going to call it? We don't call it the Xbox 360. We call it the 360. You call it the Xbox, the 360, and we're going to call this the One? I don't. It's just that's not what people are going to call it. So it's going to have to find its own little niche of a name.
Going backwards, flailing the arms in slow motion.
I'm the One.
Exactly. The One. My name is Neo.
You know it.
It's coming.
You know what? That's what I'm going to call it from now on. The Neo.
Neo.
And and
the Uno.
The Uno. and I think similarly what they did with the whole system and what they could have done was said, look at this awesome gaming system we made, and it does TV as a single app, and it does, you know, Netflix as an app. And I don't know, I guess I think what's going on right now is people are not rebranding well with it. I'm not saying it's not a good product and they're not going the right direction, because I think they are. And I think people that are really whining about it haven't really thought through it. I think once people get to use it for a while, they really actually will like it, as long as it works. And I don't think it's like Xbox controlled voice command remote for your box is going to work as well as everybody wants it to. But
man, I don't know, the examples he gave were pretty impressive, and that, again, that Wired article that they were talking about, they were showing off they were focusing on some of the video stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But they were talking about just some of the impressive things that what's that thing called, and why are they still calling it something separate? Yeah, the Kinect. I mean, they've done some pretty impressive technological things with that.
I think it's a
great... Of course, weren't you the one who was saying that during the keynote, if people were watching it through their Xbox,
it was great.
The guy gave the command, it was... Yeah. The Xbox would do
it. Right, because like one of the commands that you give is Xbox Home, and it will like go to the home screen. And so they
can
give you
that a bunch.
Yeah, he's giving this example. He'd be like, so now when you're going to navigate back to the home screen, Xbox Home, and the Kinect, if you're watching the video through your Xbox, your Kinect would hear that over the speaker system, goes, okay, I'm going to go home. And it would stop the video and flip back home. And people were like, it was super annoying. I had to like turn off my Kinect. I had to like unplug it, like turn off the voice stuff so I could watch this stupid video.
That's funny.
I know. It's just one of those like...
Which I hear is the same with Google Glass, where if someone's hearing it, they just go, okay, Glass.
Yeah.
Boom. Doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
Oh, which is awesome.
And that's something we'll work through. I mean, you see that more and more. We'll figure out.
It drives me nuts with Siri. I'll try to use it, and someone else will be talking nearby, and it's just
really. I almost have never have any problems with Siri.
It kills me. I just give. Typically, it's my wife, and I just give her the stink eye. She goes, "Oh, sorry."
Yeah.
And she's quiet, and I give the command again, and it actually works. But So voice is a weird one. But I thought it was cool. He did some gesturing stuff where he was like, if you wanted to make it full screen, he goes, you just do full screen stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds like that the Kinect is done. So it is pretty fantastic. So in this Wired thing, they showed a video of all the different things that it tracks. And so like one of them is it has your skeleton.
Yeah.
And so it can see like kind of what you're doing. And they said they added a ton of new joints to it. So like if you just turn your wrist, it can track that. And then they took it even a step further where they know your orientation. So if you have your hand out and you turn your hand over, the Kinect knows that.
Wow.
And yeah, and so they're like, and the picture that you're looking at there is that particular one. They also went as far as to go, they know your muscle force. So when you jump in the air or when you lean to a side, it's able to be like, okay, we think we know, you know, which muscles you're going to use in order to do this, which gives them other stuff to know. So like they showed a boxing one. So it was like when you went to go punch, they knew, oh, there's going to be a ton of force here.
Right.
And so it could, you know, and based on your speed and how fast you did it, they'd know if that was a hard punch or not. You know, just making it more realistic. They were able to track your heart rate. And they're like, yeah, we literally look at like the follicles on your skin to see if you're sweating and other stuff. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit of voodoo magic.
Yeah.
And then they look at your face and they can tell if you're happy or sad or just standing there. And you know,
that's scary as hell.
Yeah. And then they could bring in the 6 people and it could track all of them.
That's impressive.
And it knew depth on where the people were. In terms of where they stood in the room.
Some of the stuff that they did with the old piece of hardware, the old Kinect, you know, from a software perspective, is because it's all open, you know, you can get all that data and do all sorts of crazy stuff with it. It's really impressive what people have been able to do with it. So all they're doing, it sounds like, is they've, you know...
They're adding more sensors.
Right, and the thing is...
Because they even talked about, like, yeah, it's got the regular, like, the color sensor, it's got the light sensor, and then it had, like, an infrared so that... Because they showed an example of they were in front of a room and all you had was the lamp on.
Yeah.
And it had a really harsh thing and only like half your face showed up. They're like, see, if all we do is we look at the light one, it won't work. But because we had the infrared like, and they switched the view to that, there was as if there was no light in the room at all. You could literally turn off all the lights and it still knew where you were.
That's cool.
And could track you.
Right.
It's like kind of creepy for those midnight ice cream runs.
Yeah. But, good thing ice cream is cold.
And it was, I think the old one was like this too, where it was pinged to his or set to his voice. So when the demonstrator started talking, it knew, oh, it's you. And so, and then what it did is it went, okay, if I talked and said, okay, Xbox, you go, oh, I know you're James. And now I'm going to track you on the screen. And so even if we switch spots and stuff,
yeah,
it knew, oh, that's James over there. That's his player, his avatar.
Yeah, and it's definitely. I mean,
so that's cool.
I'm excited, and what I really like to see about this is that you know, I've been a big advocate of the Kinect for a while. You know, some of the stuff that they did, video games that they made for them were so bad. But I've been a long believer that the piece of hardware in its essence and what we're gonna do with it eventually is gonna be awesome. And I'm glad that it's clearly they looked at what everybody was making. And, you know, for the third party stuff, and they definitely moved forward with it, and they're building it in such a way that it, you know, it's going to be usable and awesome, and they're going further down those roads that have been kind of set for them to make it easier and better. You know, Elite Motion, you know, they keep talking about how cool their stuff is, but I got a feeling that, you know,
it sounds like they're gonna try to bring the Kinect to PCs.
Right. Well, that was one of the things that they wanted to do. Like, you know, Bill Gates was saying, "Yeah, we're gonna do that. We're gonna bring it to the egg." Oh my goodness.
Destroying.
I know. It's awesome here. You know. That was one of the goals of what? Just his name, Bill Gates. You know, back when he was still like an active member of, you know, Microsoft. So, you know, it's been a long term goal for them to do, and I think, you know, hopefully you'll see that more and more, because I definitely think that there are advantages there. And, you know, a lot of people in the audience, I'm sure, are right now going, it's stupid, it doesn't work that well. But just use your imagination here. That's what we said about touchscreens.
Exactly. I just watched the Muppet movie the other night, and the Muppet babies were totally into using your imagination.
Exactly. And I think what we got
just a random side note.
Thank you.
I just had to interject that.
And I don't know. I think that I definitely think, you know, I've described games before where the idea is like, you know, if I can use my, you know, big gestures for different controls and stuff, and, you know, along with controllers and along with my voice, and you have all these different forms of input on different levels, I don't know, I think you can really create unique gaming and experiences and create cool, you know, user cases where it'd be really awesome to get rid of the, you know, the remote completely. Just, you don't even need it. Just, if you could get to the point where, you know, you can, as it gets smarter,
just kill it.
Xbox, kill that bad guy. Okay, thanks. Xbox, beat this mission.
just wait.
Xbox, shoot that gazelle.
Chop that llama.
Yeah, chop that llama, oh, man. And, you know, I all of these things are moving in a direction that I think eventually creates a useful technology that everybody will use. You know, a lot of this, like you said, a lot of it, all it does is show us how short it is from what we, you know, how far we are from where we want to be. And it almost generates frustration because it's like, it could be awesome, but it's not. The thing is, though, it's like, if you think about where we were even, you know, 5 years ago with a lot of this technology in that it didn't really exist, you know, compared to now, it's just, I don't know, it keeps making leaps and bounds and getting better. And there's this real learning process with the engineers of, you know, trying to figure out what's the right balance for user interface. You know, it's this whole new thing. We haven't been thinking, you know, we've been thinking about how to, we've had millions and millions of people doing practical experimentations with keyboards and mice for the last few decades because that's the only options we have. So we've gotten those really tight.
Right.
Whereas now it's like we're just doing massive beta testing really, you know, for the first time where you were letting millions and millions of users use this stuff and going, oh, okay, that didn't work that well. You know? and every once in a while you throw a genius in there and give them controls of the fine tuning and you get these big breakthroughs of whether it's, you know, touch screens or voice recognition or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to continue to make leaps and bounds and it's getting more and more awesome. Eventually it will actually be usable and fully integrated. So
how is this affecting other console sales now that they have announced it?
Well, okay, I'm gonna cut you off because I want to talk about this other one.
Really quick. I was gonna loop back to that.
But this is actually has to do with Microsoft, not just. So another part of, well, I'll trust you. I guess I'll trust you. Sorry. So how is this affecting other consoles? Well, the real answer is not very much yet. Because the Wii U has just completely collapsed in sales. And it's only sold like 46,000 units, in North America in the last, it's below 40,000 units, in April. And in Japan, it shipped less below 7,000.
That's bad, right?
Yeah, it's terrible, man. They're not selling. The PS3 sold 12,000 units. The 3DS sold 46,000 units. The PS Vita sold 12,000 units.
The Vita!
And the PSP managed to sell 6,000 units. So this is not good news. They're not doing nearly as well as they want. And the real problem is, and what everyone's terrified about, or what everyone's shocked about, is that all of these numbers came out pre-Xbox One launch. Announcement, I should say. So, Wii's probably not going to sell many more consoles at this point.
They had a brilliant idea and
marketed it terribly.
Well, I was just thinking of the Wii itself.
Oh.
And, you know, and they profited from it and did really well and just didn't have their next move in mind.
I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, with the Wii U, it's actually really cool and it's got some really unique game features that are really fun. But they're really hard to understand when you're standing in a store. It doesn't display well at all, which, you know, is the classic, you know, how did Apple, one of the big reasons Apple was turned around was because they built their own store so they could show you the experience they wanted to show you. And it's been very difficult for Nintendo to show the experience they want to show you. although it gets pretty good reviews for people who are actually using it. And
we got to wait until E3 to see what Sony's actually doing, right? Because they did that teaser.
They did a big tease, and so that's why it doesn't really affect.
And then we'll know better or not who we think is a better console.
Yeah.
Or uninformed opinion.
Right, that makes sense.
So what are some of the things that, you know, could hurt Xbox and people wanting to adopt it?
So one of the big ones.
See, I brought it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know what, I told you I trust you. So, so one of the, like, the classic social parts of playing video games, two classic social aspects of playing video games. One is co-play, co-op playing together, playing over the internet. It's a bunch of phones.
It's like what we're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. But the other part that kind of goes under the radar is sharing games and playing pre-owned or buying games. And Xbox wants to put the kibosh on that. They'd really like anybody who owns the game to buy the game and keep the game, and if anybody else wants to have it, they gotta pay a fee. So, they have confirmed that with the Xbox, they don't have always on DRM, which is
like EA's SimCity.
Right, which was the big fear originally, but they do not have that. But what they do have instead is, in order to play a video game on your Xbox One, you need to download the game to the hard drive from the disc, and then your Xbox Live account will connect and say, okay, you have this game. It'll connect it to your Xbox Live account, and then once it's actually done that, if you were to give that same disc to another person because you sold it to your younger brother or...
Because you were done playing with it, had no intention of playing it again, maybe.
Right, which is what everybody would, you know, which is... Or you just let your friend borrow it.
Yeah, there you go.
You know...
hey, this game's awesome. Oh, I'm thinking about buying it. Oh, yeah, here, borrow it for the weekend and tell me what you think. And get it yourself if you like it.
So now, in order to do that, you've got to download it to your hard drive, which isn't a horrible thing, but it also connects to your Xbox Live. And if it's already... if that disc has already been used... it'll charge you. There's going to be a fee. They haven't said what the fee is, as far as I know. But it will not...
If Microsoft is smart, it'll be small.
Yeah.
You know, they won't...
If Microsoft is smart, they wouldn't have done this.
Well, it's a piracy thing, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's just trying to get that last little bit.
So how is this going to affect Redbox?
They do games?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do a lot of games. You know, I don't know. I just this is going to affect. This affects a lot of different people. There's already an industry there for used games, borrowing games, renting games. It's like you can't rent games anymore. What the heck is that garbage? Without paying Microsoft.
I guess that would be the equivalent of you've got a DVD or Blu-ray. I guess you want to play the movie, and you know, maybe it doesn't install, but you know, whatever. You do go to Blockbuster, you rent the Blu-ray, you put it in your drive, and it goes, oh, you want to watch this? $5.
Right, I know. And even if it was like 99 cents, like I would flip my lid.
I guess there's nothing really wrong with that. It's just not the way the industry has worked
not even,
for the last 30 years. But maybe that's...
I do have a problem with it, though. I have a fundamental problem with the idea.
Well, they should just get rid of the discs if they don't like it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, for whatever reason, you know, that's largely what Steam... Well, it's not what Steam does.
Well, that's what Kindle's doing with their ebooks, right?
Yeah.
You can't give away an ebook. Well, okay. You actually can... Now, and they brought that functionality back. Oh, yeah, you can borrow it for a little bit, which is cool.
Yeah, we'll delete it from one device, and you can share that license with somebody else. And that's what I sit there and I go, you know, I can
greed.
It is.
They're trying to get that last little piece.
Right, and it's, you know, they're trying the strategy. I think it's going to hurt.
I bet they get sued over it if that's true.
Yeah.
Just like they did with the antivirus stuff. I bet that you'll get, you know, Redbox or, you know, whoever it is. What are those secondhand ones? I can't remember.
Game Crazy or whatever.
Yeah, well, whatever. There's a bunch of online trading ones.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that they will all, you know, just have a cow.
All class action lawsuit. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? I would. You know, if they're going to destroy the business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think.
Interesting. Interessante, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Xbox, so when are you running out and getting one? I love that.
Let me say, probably never. I want an Apple TV, I think. I do kind of dislike what they're doing for it with, what's it called? I can't. Oh my goodness, my brain. We talked about it last week. They're not putting
iTunes.
iTunes on other devices. That bothers me. Okay. And so I do realize that if I get an Apple TV, I'll be more and more entrenched in that content distribution channel, which would be kind of annoying. If they're going to be less,
come on,
they're
play less and less fine.
Nice. Yeah, for now.
All right. Let's, how are we doing on time here? We're good. Let's switch gears.
Yeah.
To something else. Your turn, take it away.
So Samsung and Google, we talk about this all the time, or not all the time, but more and more, because more and more, I think we're wanting some sort of a big duking between Google and Samsung. I want it. I'm a big fan of when companies get all damn dirty with each other.
It's not a soap opera unless there's some sort of conflict.
Exactly. And so sometimes, I'll be honest.
Hi, Mom. I know you're listening. She has figured out how to watch All My Children on Hulu.
Nice.
We were watching it this morning.
Yeah.
I forgot what that show was about. And I remembered.
What is it about?
It's just about relationships. Yeah. And relationships,
yeah. Just fighting with relationships.
Oh, it was funny.
Yeah.
I loved it. Hi, Mom.
Was she watching it on her new...
Which is cool. New Windows 8 machine. Yeah. Which we'll try really hard not to bash, because I know that she listens to these podcasts.
Yeah.
The machine is good. The computer
hardware
is good.
No.
I've had the opportunity to play with Windows 8. There are a few things that I don't fully understand why they chose to implement the way that they did.
Yeah. No.
But
you and nobody else.
That's just me. 8.1.
Yeah.
Right? They'll fix it all.
That's funny. So back to Google and the Samsung.
Yes, that's right.
I realize they're not arguing out loud yet. So this is just sort of a little bit of speculation.
You heard it here first.
Think that this is going to become more and more a problem. We talked about the fact that that Samsung is going to be trying to steal programmers from Apple and Google. They're setting up shop in San Jose. We talked about that last week. Well,
right.
I didn't realize this, but they've taken it to a new level. They want to deal with the fragmentation problem head on. For Google.
Oh, good job, Samsung.
I know, it's really nice, but they want to incentivize developers to make Samsung-exclusive apps.
Really?
Yes.
How does that help with fragmentation?
Well, their argument is...
No way!
Yeah, this is awesome. This is great. So what their argument is, or what their goal is they want to become... They now have so much market share with their... I know, this is great. I love this because they're basically...
We want to deal with the fragmentation issue by essentially killing all the other competitors, and that'll solve the fragmentation issue.
I know. It's brilliant. And Google's like, what? Wait a second. That's not how that's supposed to work. And it's just...
What?
It totally makes sense. You've got a platform. The operating system that you use, the hardware that you use, is the most standard in the entire industry. And as a developer, if I were going to develop an app for Google, the first thing I would do would be develop for the Galaxy devices. And then I would think about maybe developing for the next competitor. And
if it's close to proximity to the Galaxy, screen size and resolution are similar.
Right, on hardware. Yeah,
all right,
okay,
cool.
Yeah, we'll make it. And so Google,
do it for the Nexus because you want to play nice with Google stuff that we end up in commercials.
It's nice, but but at the same time, so Samsung, they're just straight up, no. We want the best apps and only those and to be only available on our platform. And they're just going to, this is great.
So wait, are they going to have their own app store or how does that
I don't know what their plan is. They don't really talk about it.
I guess you can probably specify in the Google Play Store if it's compatible with, what it's compatible with, huh?
Yeah.
Be my guess. I don't know how that works. Obviously, they've they've got to figure it out, but
yeah, they're gonna.
I like Samsung.
And they're this is a big, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to build these. they're trying to build apps that are how they're doing this is they're incentivizing them with awards. The first prize winner will get $200,000.
Wait, for doing what?
They're gonna have people develop a bunch of different apps.
Okay.
And then they're gonna go forward and sell, and then they're going to judge all the different apps, and they're going to
By number of downloads, or what's the criteria?
They don't say. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, but the top prize winner, the best app, will get $200K. But there's going to be $800K worth of prizes that they're going to be able to split up with everybody. And they said the one thing is the app has to be free for people to download, which is great because they want people to make great apps that everybody will use.
Yeah.
They can support in-app purchases. And it also, they're talking about how, this might be part of a, you can make it like a free version of what would become a pro version later on. But in order to win the grand prize, you probably just have to make a full featured app. But it's one of those things where, yeah, it's just brilliant, man. And what they're going to do is they're going to force Google and they're going to force all the other hardware manufacturers to chase them. Samsung's added this feature and this little functionality and this piece of hardware. So now we have to, or we can't use the apps that people are developing for, them, or we can't chase that same developer. We can't chase the same stuff. And all of a sudden, we talked about the fact that, a classic case of, the dog or the tail wagging the dog last week. And I think it's just become an extreme vision of that.
This is just a competition, right? It's not necessarily they're doing this from now on.
No. Well, yeah, correct. They're not. This isn't. But I think this is just your first volley in a.
Yeah, they're just testing the waters.
Right, because what they're realizing is they're at a place where they can start to really, battle the competition, the other hardware manufacturers. And they can start to really, really push Google to do whatever they want Google to do. If Google wants to stay with this hardware manufacturer, with this OEM, they got to play nice with Samsung.
That's funny.
I know. I just thought it was brilliant. I thought it was great. So messed up. Oh, my gosh. Google has to just – sometimes they have to, go to bed at my – lay in bed at night trying to fall asleep just thinking, how did we get here? We went from, we're going to build this little toy of an operating system for smartphones to the number one dominant operating system in the mobile market to completely bold into Samsung in, 5 years.
Come on, Motorola.
So much, I know.
That's probably what they're just. They're just kind of being quiet, running as hard as they can with that, hoping that, they'll add competition.
At some point, if this gets bad enough, I think what you'll see Google do is a launch exclusive Google only stuff for their hardware. But it just would. But the problem now that they've run into is that Samsung's doing so well. Samsung is already in development of their own operating system, and if they push hard enough, Samsung just launches their own operating system.
Man, you just wait for them to fork Android.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already halfway there with their layer on top.
And that's what I'm saying is
they just stick it to them. But why would they?
I mean, well,
they're
point,
obviously being super profitable.
Right.
They're doing really well. What's their incentive to spurn Google?
Right. Well, yeah, because Google does so much of their software development for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's if Google pushes back hard enough, that's their trump card, is they have no incentive to fork Android at this point,
yeah.
But they have no reason not to if Google doesn't play fair anymore. And all of a sudden it becomes, literally overnight it becomes the most dominant platform in the world, and Google just is completely cut out of it. So it's like this is putting them in a weird place.
Well, for the sake of the podcast, I hope it gets messy.
Me too. I love it.
Oh, Samsung. Those guys, they compete.
Yeah.
They compete.
Yeah, you're not messing around, man. I guess it's like the one thing that I have to, when they were like when they were cheating, lying, and stealing around Apple, and like, you know, you're like, this is the operating system that I like. You know, it was like, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's hard to take, but it's fun to watch because I just like to watch the sport of it. But at the same time, it like materially affects like the quality of my products. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, and play nice, okay. But now that you see that they do it, like, they don't have any allegiances, really.
No, they don't. They're just hey, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Google now.
They're just aggressive. And, yeah, you're like, you know, at least they're, you know, equal opportunity. That's pretty awesome.
They're just doing their thing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So, last thing I have to talk about.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Last thing I had to talk about is there's two new commercials coming out, and I'm a big fan of commercials. But one of them is it's an iPhone commercial and a Windows tablet commercial. And I don't know if we want to try to play these.
Well, let's try it. I don't know if this is going to work.
Okay.
Did you sound up?
I got it.
This is as low as it gets.
Yep.
Okay, it's piano playing, a girl listening to music while playing ballet, a person in the shower changing their song, a person in school studying, listening to music, in a library, in a cafe, tapping her feet, doing some jump rope, working out, listening to music. This guy's tapping on the chair, she's singing in the car. This guy's getting ready to swim with his headphones on, weird. Break dancer, regular dancer, little kid dancer, people dancing in the car.
Crescendo of piano music.
Craziness. These are all very young people.
Yeah.
Sun flares, Star Trek. So it's essentially, it's like Apple's photo commercial, but for music.
Yeah, yeah. Which gave me all sorts of like chills and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. When I first watched it, I was like, is that, you know, I talk about all the time that, you know, my number one thing that I do with my phone is listen to music. I listen just a ton of music and I listen to it loud and I listen to it, you know, and just kind of like goof off. And you like, a lot of those scenes for me are like, wow, that resonates because that's the sort of thing that I do. And, you know, I like, you know, soft piano music that, like, reaches some sort of crescendo. Like, it's just like, you know, from an emotional, like,
for some piano music.
Oh, man. And I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, Apple post Steve Jobs, postmortem, was their commercials sort of hit, like, a weird thing where it was like, this doesn't feel very Apple-ish to
me. Well, it was almost like whoever was in charge of the commercials had these ideas. And were like, these are brilliant ideas. I want to try them. And Steve always put the kibosh on them.
Yeah.
And then when he was done, he said, okay, I want to do these ideas because they're awesome. And they went, okay, do it. And they ran those two genius ads.
Yeah.
And they got done. I went, you're fired.
Yeah, yeah. Go away.
Yeah. Okay. Never speak again. Yeah.
This is why Steve Jobs didn't let you do that, because they're awful. And they did a couple of those ones with what's his name, the comedian, who was narrating the whole thing.
Comedian? Jeff Daniels?
Jeff Daniels, yeah. He would be so mad. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, Jeff Daniels. You're a legitimate actor. You have done more than Dumb and Dumber.
Pleasantville.
Pleasantville, exactly.
Just to name one.
Yeah, he's a brilliant actor, and that's he has talked about the fact before that like his biggest struggle in life is that that Dumb and Dumber was just such a like a hallmark in the world.
Awesome.
Every other actor has a lot of respect for him, and yet he's still thought of as the comedian guy from Dumb and Dumber.
It was really good.
I know, but it's I love that movie so much.
We're in the Alps.
Oh, that's a great movie. I want to go watch it right now. Anyways, those are good commercials, but those didn't have that sort of like, oh yeah, this is why life in the world is awesome kind of feel that Apple commercials occasionally do. Well, they were more of a return to the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC style commercials, which is good. I mean, there's definitely a reason for that where it displays actual things that you can do with it. But I feel like the...
Which I've always liked about Apple commercials. Yes. It shows you things you can do on them.
Exactly. And then, but these ones are the ones that always get me like, oh man, I want to go to an Apple store and spend too much money on Apple products. Where it's like, it's like those emotional ones where it's like, this is the one of their like, their greatest achievement ones I always thought was the one with the FaceTime one. Where,
oh man.
Where it's like the people are like signing I love you to each other. Like, oh my God.
Everyone's crying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's so beautiful. And this one's just like, oh man, this is like, you know, it's a bunch of people in like Seattle and San Francisco and like all your metropolitan music areas. Yeah. Just like a bunch of like, you know, kids dancing and stuff. And you're just like, this is why I love music. I need my iPhone so I can love music. And it's just, I realize that they're just like playing with my emotional heartstrings in order to sell me products and, you know, push materialism, but it works so well and I enjoy it so much. I don't know. It was great. And the thing that really brings me, like, I think is really, is the startling stark contrast of the Windows 8 commercial called Less Talking, More Doing.
Making hits. Oh, it can't do screen sharing. Ooh. And not even that well.
And then they show the price, and the iPad is $700, and the Windows tablet.
Which is kind of like, A, they show the iPad mini in the picture, and then they show the regular iPad pricing.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, guys. I mean, if you're going to insult them, I don't know. It's just a little
thing. They did a number of things that if you don't have like the eye for detail and pay really close attention to what's going on, it's an effective jab. If you know anything about tech, it's just irritating. Cause you're like, okay, number one, that was the iPad mini and you're showing the iPad price for the 64 gigs. You're showing your price without the keyboard cover, which, let's remember, costs a lot more, adds like $100 to the package price. So all of a sudden they're closer to being in parity. But it was one of those, like, your device doesn't have voice recognition. It has no voice recognition services. So you made a commercial that draws everybody's attention to the fact that, oh yeah, there's features that your phone doesn't have. And the thing is like, you know, we even talk about it on the show that like, you know, we make fun of Samsung's Galaxy stuff because they're like, you know, it's got so many different features that like nobody uses. Like it's like the tap to share because I can't just text you this thing. The thing is though, those features sell the device. People buy it so they can tap to share even though it doesn't necessarily make sense or isn't even useful. And what the worst part about it though, in my opinion, is that anybody who's used Siri, like, is either indifferent towards it, like, yeah, it's whatever, or they really like it. There are very few people out there that it's awful. It's the worst thing you say. It's just, it gets right in the way. It's terrible. And it's like, I always argue that there are certain tasks that I don't do at all without Siri, like setting and managing my alarms, because Siri's just so good at it. And I sit there and I go, this is just a terrible commercial for that sort of thing. Like, and the best part about it was, and somebody else pointed this out, is not only are you drawing attention to the fact that you don't have Siri and they do, or a voice recognition thing, but you're drawing their attention to the fact that they have a piano app and you don't.
Well, and I like this middle paragraph here where it was like, you know, not only were the lines written poorly for Siri, but the abilities Microsoft chooses to highlight show exactly why it doesn't even get the tablet market. Like, people aren't looking for multitasking PowerPoint slide deck creating machines. They have computers for that.
Right. Right.
You know, it's just like, you're like, all right, well. Oh, Microsoft, it's good to be last.
Yeah, and the best part about it is, or I've listed like 17 best parts about it, but another like another wonderful angle to this commercial is it's two tablets sitting right next to each other on a white background, which is exactly how Apple does their iPad mini, iPad commercials. It's the exact same setting, and it's the Siri voice. Like, you just like, it feels like it's an Apple commercial. Hey guys,
it feels like it's a company that is bitter.
Yeah.
Instead of, or in some ways they're going, but we're cool. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just, it's more a commercial of frustration,
right,
rather than they just need to do. If they want to copy Apple,
yeah,
they need to follow the Samsung strategy, which is put the tablet on a white background with the finger and just tell us you could do PowerPoint, you could do multitasking, yeah, you can do this, this, this. Pick a theme, run with it, create like 5 or 6 different themes, and then just run those commercials. Go, these are all the different things that you can do with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the people just assume that
forget about
Microsoft,
the snap covers, say, all that stuff, you know, whatever.
Microsoft just assumes that, you know, it's Windows. Everybody will know what to do with Windows, which, yeah, to some degree is, but it's like the last Apple commercial that we're talking about, it is talking about the iPod functionality in the iPhone. I mean, it is like the oldest product that Apple,
right,
like,
which everybody understands and yeah, knows, and instead they're doing the emotional appeal.
Say, but they're celebrating, or what they're doing is they are celebrating music and just reminding you of the fact that, oh, by the way, the iPhone lets you listen to music. You know, and they're not showing the iPhone at all, except for the earbud or the earpod things. You know, that's like the most featured Apple piece of hardware in the entire, yeah, commercial spot. But what they're doing is they're celebrating music. And they're drawing this emotional response to listening to music and dancing and, you know, classical music and just that whole life experience that they're trying to, charge people for. And, people spend money and time and years of their life chasing different types of music and the musical experiences. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring all of that and tie it to a product in a really, like, you know, emotionally charged way. Whereas Microsoft is making fun of Siri, one of, you know, the better voice recognition softwares.
Yeah, at least they need to have fun with it like Samsung does,
yeah,
when they're making fun of Apple.
Oh, yeah, get some real good digs in there, exactly, where it's like, aren't you too old for that? You know, and that's the other thing, is like Nokia knows how to market it better than Microsoft products than Microsoft does, with that whole, you know, Apple versus Samsung, really, wedding battle where they all duel it out, and they're, yeah, just throwing digs back and forth at each other. I mean, you're just like, that's pretty fun. I'll give Nokia that one, and it helps that I really like the Nokia phone, and, you know, I wish it had better music support, interestingly enough, because that to me was, you know, one of the big drawbacks of the Windows phone platform. If you're going to go that route, like you said, you got to have fun with it. You got to be, yeah, a little bit creative and
better.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, man. It's such an interesting and terrible strategy that they've managed to forge for themselves.
Xbox, Microsoft, whatever, yeah. Whatever your name is.
This is definitely a Microsoft episode.
Yeah, we started out pretty, Google, got some Yahoo in there, took a quick stop on Amazon and guns, and...
Yeah, and then talked to Microsoft. Then
went Microsoft.
And, and the biggest thing, I guess, from all of this, I feel like I spent this entire episode bashing Microsoft, which, one of my...
It's par for the course.
I always say one of my hallmarks one of my favorite pastimes is complaining. criticizing. And I guess the real takeaway that I should say is I'm actually excited to see the Xbox come out and to see what they do with it, because I think they're pushing that technology forward. I think Windows 8 on a whole is they're pushing the platform forward. They're having some stumbles and some weirdness. And I guess that's actually what irritates me so much more, is that it's like they're, like you said, they get you so close to where you want to be and just fall where you can see it, and then fall short of it. Oh, come on, guys. This is just painful to watch. You're so close. You, yeah, actually could have made it. You just needed to not stumble. And then they stumble, and you just kind of shrug your shoulders and shake your head and, go on with life. But
speaking of going on with life, it is time for us to go camping.
Oh, baby. I'm super stoked.
And we'll unplug our technology for the time that we sleep. Yeah, because the rest of the time will be...
Yeah, we'll still
we're actually going to try to watch a movie while camping. It will be funny.
We're going to do that?
That's homemade awesome. Projector. Yeah, I got
Oh, man.
They were like, bring a couple DVDs because we forgot them. So, all right, I'm doing
That's
it.
That's great.
But anyways, that is what we're going to be doing. So we really appreciate you listening and listening. I was going to – no one really commented, so so there's no participation to add to that. But we really do appreciate you listening. We're going to go off to have fun. So thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my alumni graduated brother is Matthew Dean Furlow, and we will talk next time. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Quit watching a podcast. Crying out loud. Enjoy your family. Have a barbecue or something.
Yeah, seriously.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.